And that was Deer Hunter with Living My Life from their album Fading Frontier. I got to see Deer Hunter on their last tour, and they haven't reunited since or released anything since. And I'm glad I got to see them before they quit, because they were a very important band for me.
Yeah. What year did they stop producing albums?
2019.
Oh, okay.
We heard from them.
Okay. I enjoyed that. That was cool.
Yeah. That's Heather Johnson. I'm Andrew DeZingle. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, we are People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
And winter is here. You can make room in your garage the no-hassle way. Donate your vehicle to KAXE. It's easy and the towing is free. Plus, your car donation helps to keep People Powered Radio going strong. Visit KAXE.org/cars to get your car donation started. Or call me, Heather, at 218-326-1234 for more info.
And we receive support from the Sanford Bemidji Orthopedics and Sports Medicine Center, specializing in total joint repair. More at sanfordhealth.org. Now it's time for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. Governor Tim Walz was highly critical of President Donald Trump and Minnesota Republicans during a news conference Tuesday. He took questions about his decision to exit the 2026 race for a third term in office. Walz told reporters his decision was the right one and one he made with his family, as a war is being waged on Minnesota by the federal government. The state is facing increasing pressure from multiple fronts, including Tuesday's announcement of 2,000 federal agents apparently being sent to the state for immigration enforcement and fraud investigations. Walz is being heavily scrutinized for his handling of fraud in the state's health and human services programs. But he says the focus on the state is endangering livelihoods and even lives. Here's Walz from Care 11's live broadcast.
This is a concerted effort to try and destroy the president's opponents, to destroy the rule of law. And it became apparent to me that he was going to do that with me being there.
Walz was especially heated when it came to Trump amplifying a conspiracy theory that the governor was somehow involved in the assassination of former House Speaker Melissa Hortman and her husband Mark last June. He called on the state's Republicans to condemn the president's social media post.
For those legislators who went and shed crocodile tears at her funeral, shame on you. Shame on you. Her children are asking you to do one thing in her name. It's to tell the president to stop doing this.
Walz also says he will not resign, as some have called him to do, and that Republicans will not win the governor's race.
Buck stops with me. I'm accountable for this. And because of that accountability, I'm not running for office again. But I have a year to continue to improve on a record that I think will stand up against anybody's.
The intention of the news conference was to celebrate the launch of the state's paid leave program on January 1st. The governor says the program is launching on time, under budget, and with strong safeguards in place to prevent fraud. Nearly 18,000 Minnesotans have applied for the program, and to date, about 3,500 have been approved. Babbitt Mayor Andrea Zupancic will again run for State Senate District 3, setting up a likely rematch with DFL Senator Grant Hochschild. Megan Buffington has more.
The Republican lost by just 703 votes in 2022. Zupancic says she would use her experience as a mother, wife, mayor, and small business owner in office. She owns the real estate company Zup North, and her husband is a fourth-generation owner of Zup's Grocery. Zupancic called out Hochschild in her announcement, saying he is a, quote, rubber stamp for the far-left metro agenda. She says she is running to restore balance in state government and advance common-sense solutions to make life more affordable. Megan Buffington, KAXE News.
How healthy is the Northland? The Bridge to Health survey is trying to answer that question, but it needs your responses to do so. Surveys have been sent to households in northeastern Minnesota every 5 years since 1995. The goal is to fill gaps in local data by asking questions about topics like substance use, access to care, and mental health. Surveys are randomly mailed out to households in the service area, but to get good data, enough people have to fill them out. The first mailing was in September, but the Bridges to Health survey sent out another round to Itasca, Kennebec, Kuching, Pine, and St. Louis counties in December. The anonymous survey data is available online and is used by schools, health systems, and nonprofits. The data helped Essentia Health and Mesabi East with a $10,000 U.S. Department of Agriculture grant for a farm-to-school program. Other projects spurred by the data include a farmers market in Duluth and suicide prevention efforts in Aiken County. The research effort is led by the University of Wisconsin-Superior with support from over 40 local organizations. Heads up, teachers, expect lots of Olivers, Adelines, Sophias, and Hudsons in your upcoming classes. Those four baby names were the most popular in northern Minnesota in 2025, according to data from 8 area hospitals. But while dozens of like-minded parents christened their babies the same, there were still plenty of unique names like Leonard, Opaline, or River. Other top names include Jackson, Henry, and Charlotte. Check out our full list at KAXE.org. That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is made possible by Woodland Bank, serving the area since 1920 with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Woodland Bank believes in building community and serving local nonprofits like KAXE.
And you're tuned in to the Wednesday morning show here on KXE KBXE. I'm Andrew Zingel. Coming up, we're going to hear more from Morning Edition, talking about Trump and House Republicans and Republican Congressman Doug LaMalfa's legacy.
We receive support from the Mental Health Crisis Response Team of Itasca County. This crisis intervention service is a program of First Call for Help 211 and provides free crisis assessments, stabilization services, referrals, and resourcing to residents of any age who are in crisis. Available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by dialing 211.
So we were talking about National Bobblehead today, and we got a text from Britta from Kinney wishing us a happy National Bobblehead Day and sent us a picture of a Smurf bobblehead.
I love it. Can you tell which Smurf it is? I was going to try to...
I don't know. It looks like... I'm not sure which Smurf, but we want to hear from you. Text us your bobbleheads today, 218-326-1234. The more obscure, the better.
Absolutely.
Now it's time for Morning Edition.
Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Layla Faldin. Good morning. There is something that Donald Trump can't quite wrap his head around.
But I wish you could explain to me what the hell's going on with the mind of the public, because we have the right policy.
That was the president speaking to House Republicans on Tuesday about the possibility of losing the House in this year's midterm elections. He was trying to offer his party a roadmap to win, as he called it.
So was he successful? NPR senior political editor and correspondent Domenico Montanaro watched the speech, and he joins me now. Domenico, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
So what are the headwinds Republicans are facing at the start of this year?
Yeah, I mean, never mind the headline-changing action in Venezuela. You know, right at the beginning of his speech yesterday, Trump acknowledged the vulnerable position that he and his party are in simply because of history.
We want everything. But they say that when you win the presidency, you lose the midterm.
And it's true that midterms are hard on a president's party. You know, on average, they lose more than two dozen seats. And it's worse when a president's approval rating is below 50%.
Right. And we know Trump's approval rating is certainly... it's been below 50% for a while.
Yeah, and he's facing his lowest approval ratings of his second term, and it's been in large measure because of the cost of living. But yeah. Trump didn't offer much yesterday in his speech on that. In fact, it took him 48 minutes before he even started talking about the economy at all. And when he did, it was about the stock market being at historic highs, and he touted his tariffs, which have actively raised prices on many things. And people have been telling pollsters for months that they feel Trump's policies have made the economy worse.
So if he didn't talk about strategy on prices, what did he talk about?
I mean, it's culture issues mostly. That's, hardly unusual for Trump. He's always seems to be weaving back to that, as he calls it. He said being against transgender athletes in sports is such a winning issue that he'd save it for the week before the election. He did an imitation of a woman lifting weights, one he said that his own wife doesn't like. She says it's not presidential, but he went on to do it anyway. He talked about pushing for voter ID laws, immigration, and crime, which in his mind are all related, he said, and his attempts at lowering drug prices on weight loss drugs, which he referred to as fat drugs. And he complained a lot about how he doesn't get the credit he feels he deserves. And he lamented at one point, "What have you done for me lately is the way you have to run your life nowadays."
Now, Trump was speaking on the same day that Republican Congressman Doug LaMalfa of California died. He was 65. Republicans already had a historically small majority. Will it be even harder now for Republicans to pass legislation?
Well, it would if there was a clear legislative agenda from Republicans in Congress, but there really isn't one right now. And a lot of those culture issues are things that Trump has gone around Congress on using executive powers. Now, one area where they could do something would be on health care. Here's what Trump said about that.
You can own health care. Figure it out. Let the money go directly to the people.
Okay, own health care. How feasible is that?
Well, Republicans, as we know, have had a long time to, quote, figure it out, more than a decade, and they haven't been able to, and they've been against extending Affordable Care Act subsidies. But it's one thing to campaign on a slogan like, let the money go to the people. It's very different to be president and to try to legislate on it. So if you're a Republican in a swing district when the ACA is about as popular as it's ever been, you got to be scratching your head wondering, what is the strategy?
NPR's Domenico Montanaro. Thank you, Domenico.
You're welcome.
Let's talk more about what Republicans realistically could accomplish ahead of the midterms in November. We've called Ron Bongean for that. He's had key positions with Republicans in the Senate and the House. He's now with the communications firm Rock Solutions. Ron Bongean, welcome back. Thanks for joining us once again.
Hi, good morning. Thank you.
What's your sense of how the president's remarks went over with the caucus?
Well, I'd say House Republicans wanted to hear President Trump talk about affordability, talk about the economy, talk about how they can get out of this health care Rubik's Cube that they're in right now. They want leadership from the president. This is the hard part. One-party rule of Washington is extremely difficult. And we've been through this before a number of times. And President Trump's right that during midterm elections, you know, the party in power usually loses the House. And to defy that, they have to be unified. They have to be focused on an agenda, connecting with Americans on what they want to hear. So I'm sure some House Republicans were frustrated that they didn't hear about affordability in the economy right away, you know, and they were told that they have to handle the healthcare issue. I think they need the president to say, here's how you get it done.
So the math isn't great for Speaker Mike Johnson. He can only stand to have two defections on a party line vote if all members are present for legislative priorities. But the question is, you know, are there really any? I mean, the logic of the president's one big bill last year was to run the table. They did that. So is health care really what they have to run on? And if so, how is that going to work going forward, since the president doesn't seem to be willing to put forward a bill?
Well, I think you're going to see an agenda coming out of House Republicans and coming out of the retreat. And I do think that the president has another opportunity, especially before the American people, with the State of the Union that will happen, you know, early this year to unveil the agenda. And they have to decide whether or not they want to use the approach they used last year for the One Big Beautiful Bill, the reconciliation process, and what those priorities would be. Right now, we haven't heard about exactly what Republicans are going to accomplish. We do know that 20 million Americans are going to lose health care coverage with the ending of Obamacare subsidies.
Many of whom are Republicans and key Republican constituencies. I mean, they're entrepreneurs, small business people, farmers, people.
That's exactly right. Many of these are in MAGA districts, you know. But you do have committee chairmen who are working on pieces of legislation that they need to start talking about, and that the president needs to take the leadership and talk about the agenda, and here's what we're going to be doing, not only about the successes they did through the One Big Beautiful Bill, but here's the plan going forward on how to make your lives better, American lives better, and more, you know, more affordable for their bottom line. That needs to happen.
Let me run two more questions by you before we go. Trump, the president, encouraged Republicans to be, quote, flexible on abortion restrictions in order to get a health care bill passed. That's a non-starter for many Republicans. Is that possible? Is there a compromise possible, in your opinion?
I think that it's going to, that's threading a needle that's very difficult. That's a very small needle to thread. And is it possible? Yeah, I'd say it's possible, not impossible. Going to be very, very difficult. But right now, when you're facing, you know, the prospect of lots and lots of real hardship stories. The pressure is really on these folks to come through.
So let's talk about Venezuela in the minute we have left. The administration's seizure of Venezuela's president, Trump's remarks about running the country. Unpopular among many America First Republicans, or so, you know, self-described America First Republicans. What are you hearing from the rest of the conference? Whatever they're saying publicly, what do you hear about their understanding of this and how this is playing with them?
Yeah, I think most Republicans think, okay, good, Maduro's a bad guy, we're glad he's out, but now what's the plan? And many Senate Republicans are waiting to comment, for example, because they're going to be hearing from the administration in a briefing today answering questions about the path forward in Venezuela. We do know that President Trump just talked about, you know, getting 30 to 50 million barrels of oil, which is a couple of billion dollars, which is good news. But they want to hear what's the plan forward with Venezuela.
That is Republican strategist Ron Bongean. Ron, thanks so much for joining us once again.
Thank you.
As we mentioned earlier, Republican Congressman Doug LaMalfa died on Tuesday during an emergency surgery. He was 65. LaMalfa is being remembered as a conservative advocate for constituents in rural Northern California. From member station KQED, Guy Marzorati reports.
LaMalfa was a fourth-generation rice farmer who loved bringing colleagues up to his Butte County home. In 2021, he even joined a House Agriculture Committee hearing on his phone while sitting atop his combine harvester.
Secretary, thanks for being with our hearing today as I come from our combine in North Cal.
LaMalfa served 13 years in Congress after several years in the state legislature. He was an ardent supporter of building more reservoirs to store water for California farms, which won praise Tuesday from President Trump.
He was the leader of the Western Caucus, a fierce champion on California water issues. He was great on water. He wanted to release the water, he'd scream at him.
LaMalfa represented a sprawling Northern California district about the size of West Virginia.
He would be at every community function, and he would go to the furthest parts of the district.
State Assemblymember James Gallagher said LaMalfa was everywhere.
And he did it sometimes probably exceeding the speed limit while he did.
Gallagher remembered LaMalfa's work after the 2018 campfire, the deadliest in California history, which wiped out the town of Paradise.
He came through with major federal funding for debris removal, for recovery of the water system.
LaMalfa's death leaves Republicans in Congress with just a 5-seat majority. California Governor Gavin Newsom will soon call a special election for the seat, which is likely to remain in Republican hands. But that could change within a matter of months. Diana Dwyer, professor of political science at Cal State Chico, says the lines of LaMalfa's district are changing under Proposition 50, the redistricting measure passed by California voters last year.
This is one of the districts that was drawn in order to flip it to the Democratic side.
That means whoever fills LaMalfa's seat might only be there for a short amount of time, with elections under the new lines already planned for November. For NPR News, I'm Guy Marzorati in San Jose.
This is NPR News.
And you're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show here on KAXE, KBXE, People Power Radio. My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm here with Heather Johnson. And we were talking about food trends for 2026, and one of them was more celery in desserts. And we started talking about possibility of celery ice cream, and our very own engineer Steve was like, so ice cream that tastes like crunchy water? We're not sure yet.
We looked it up, and ice cream was just my example of a celery dessert. But you found celery sorbet.
Yeah.
Which did not look, it was a very appealing color.
It does, but it makes me think like, oh, I'm about to get a minty flavored ice cream or a lime flavored sherbet.
Yeah. I could definitely see throwing some lime in there because celery is not like a strong flavor.
No.
Oh, my goodness.
And then we were also talking about Cinnamon Toast Crunch and cinnamon rolls, and we heard from AJ in Bemidji. Speaking of Cinnamon Toast Crunch, do you guys remember French Toast Crunch? Far superior, and I'm pro fork for cinnamon rolls. It's not weird. It's less messy. It makes sense.
It does.
But
it
no, does. I remember when the fresh French Toast Crunch came out, but I never tried it.
I feel like I probably didn't try that either. It sounds like an amazing snack. Like super sugary.
Do you remember Frosted Cheerios? Do they still make, I don't think they make those anymore.
But they make so many Cheerios now. There are just a ton. There's like chocolate Cheerios. There's pumpkin spice Cheerios. Oh my gosh.
Really?
Yes.
Pumpkin spice Cheerios.
Yes, there are some on my desk right now. They're a great snack. So you buy them at the end of the season, you know, you get the little discount.
Well, I tell you what, my grandpa, who lived to be 105 years old, mm-hmm. he was a daily Honey Nut Cheerios guy.
Oh, Honey Nut Cheerios, yeah.
Every day.
Yes, I loved those when I was a kid. And, you know, I think they're like a whole grain, right? So.
Yeah, it's got to be something. Keeps a guy to 105, so
exactly.
Something in there.
There's a trade-off with the sugar.
And then also, do you remember Alphabet cereal?
I loved Alphabets. I don't know if they, do they still make them?
I don't know. I don't think they do.
I haven't seen them, but.
See, we weren't allowed to get the marshmallow one. We just got the, like, there was Alphabets, yeah. And then there was Alphabets with marshmallows where the vowels were marshmallows. We weren't allowed to get that one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't remember the one with marshmallows, but Alphabets for sure was like a big treat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those were great. And then you could spell out, you know, random things in your cereal and take way too long to eat your breakfast in the morning as a kid. Yeah.
What was it about being a kid where you just like wanted to take forever eating breakfast?
You know, or take forever doing anything. I think there are a couple things at play, but I don't know. Kids have more wonder. They take more time looking closely at things. And
do the backs of cereal boxes still have like mazes and stuff like that?
Yes, they okay. do. Absolutely, they do. I mean, not that I would ever, you know, play the games or whatever. No, they do. They have
okay.
Sudoku and crossword puzzles and things. Yeah.
Here's a question for you. What's the best little toy you ever got in a cereal box?
Oh.
Because I can think of two that I got that I really enjoyed.
Let me think. I know at some point there were these little Sesame Street finger puppets.
Ooh.
They were very, very cute, but I don't remember what they came in. So I would say that. I think I have Bert and Ernie and Cookie Monster. Still somewhere in my house.
Nice. So for me, I remember getting a Trix spoon from the Trix one. And it had like the rabbit's head on the top of the spoon.
Yeah.
And then when you put it in milk, the spoon would change colors.
Oh, I remember the commercials like, for that.
It was like a greenish yellow, but when you put it in water, it would turn like red.
Oh, that's a good one.
And then the other one I really enjoyed was this submarine I got with Fruit Loops, where you would put it in the water and it would like drop and then it would come back up.
Oh, well, that sounds like a great toy.
It was a great little toy.
And they don't do toys anymore.
I don't think so.
I remember that the King Vitamin cereal, I don't know if they make that anymore either. But that would always have a mask on the back that you could cut out.
Oh.
And they were, I think kings and queens and jesters and yeah, it was.
See, I don't remember a King Vitamin cereal.
King Vitamin cereal was the one where it was a sweet cereal and it would like cut the roof of your mouth open.
Oh, like a Cap'n Crunch.
Yeah, yeah, only harder. Yeah, I don't know what the deal was, but it was something about roughing up the inside of your mouth was part of their marketing plan, maybe.
Oh, it's the vitamins.
Yeah, that's how they get into, yeah, exactly. It's the delivery system.
So we want to hear from you. What have you gotten from a cereal box that you still remember? Text us at 218-326-1234. What about Cracker Jack's box?
See, they used to have great prizes, right? I remember when I was a kid, it was a rare treat to get a box of Cracker Jack. but now they're just little paper things. So they're little stickers or tattoos, but they used to be...
You could get like rings.
Yeah, like little trinkets or like a whistle or something like that. You know, there's the classic, did you get your driver's license in a box of Cracker Jack? So apparently they were handing those out too.
Wow, I missed out.
You had to do it the hard way.
I had to go to classes for a bunch of times.
Boo.
But now, like we do on every Wednesday morning show, we play something from the vault, the KBXC vinyl library, that big vault filled with vinyl records.
Yeah, it's a hallowed place.
And we do this to encourage our KBXC volunteers to go back there and like pick through the music to play on the air, because there's a treasure trove of music back there.
Yeah, you can go back there and just get lost in the possibilities. That's what I love.
So, Heather, I gave you the power to select which record we listen to today. So what did you pick?
Well, it was an enormous amount of power, and I was kind of overwhelmed. But I chose a song from Laura Nyro, and it's very very chill, easy morning listening. And if your cat is having their breakfast, it's very appropriate for that.
What's the song called?
It's the cat song, right?
Yes. And what was that song again?
That was the cat song by Laura Nyro. Yeah, that was kind of a treasure from back in the vault. I mean, if you're looking at Laura Nyro songs, you could be back there a long time because she, you know, has quite
prolific.
A few albums. Yeah, yeah.
So that was From the Vault, where we play something from the KBXE vinyl library. And we were talking cereals, and we've got a couple texts from the text line, from our very own Kari Hedlund. We did a cereal challenge a few years ago at KXC and tried alphabet cereal, remembering how much we all loved them. They did not taste as good anymore.
And then you wonder, like, did they change it or did I change?
Yeah.
Right. Is it me or is it them? And then our very own Steve Noy says, I mean, if we're talking about childhood cereals, are either of you old enough to remember the Nintendo cereal system? One box with two cereals in it, Zelda on one side, Mario on the other. He sent us a picture of the box. It looks amazing.
So I wasn't old enough to have had this cereal, but I do have comic books that would advertise this cereal all the time.
That's
and it
cool.
looked fascinating.
Yeah, that's not, you know, it was pretty rare for me to have a true name brand cereal in the house. My grandparents did have name brand cereal. So I could sneak a bowl when I was over there. But no, I never had that one. The packaging is fantastic. Whoever made that was pretty smart.
What would they make a video game cereal out of now? Fortnite?
Oh, goodness gracious. I think Minecraft does have a cereal.
Really?
I think. Justin Jefferson has a cereal. Not, you know, there's a cereal for everything. But yeah, I'm going to be honest. I don't really know that many video games.
Me neither. That's Heather Johnson. I'm Andrew Dezingle. You're tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. We receive support from the Timberlake Lodge and Hotel in Grand Rapids. On-site amenities include a restaurant with a full bar and the Grand Splash Pool area with water slides and a hot tub. Further details are available at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com.
And support comes from the Watermark Art Center in downtown Bemidji, featuring rotating work from Bemidji State University's print and ceramics collections. The center is accessible and open to all. More at watermarkartcenter.org.
It's time now for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary for today, January 7th.
All right. Millie Nordine is turning 14 today in Mendota Heights. Happy birthday, Millie.
And Karen Filardo in Bemidji is turning 72 today. Happy birthday, Karen.
And we want to wish a happy birthday to Douglas Pellemounter, also turning 72, and in Grand Rapids.
All right, now we're going to play a tune for you. This is Bahamas with the song Feels So Good.
Professional to tell you what went wrong. If my music sounds confessional, you've read into every song. 'Cause it feels so good to do it. Everything and think you know the truth. You could recognize the ignorance we all carry from our youth. But it feels so good to do it.
And that was Feel So Good by Bahamas from their album My Second Last Album that came out late last year. And if you have a birthday or anniversary to share, text us at 218-326-1234. Coming up, we're going to hear more from Maury Edition talking about Greenland from European leaders and TPS migrants post-Maduro. That'll be coming up in just a bit. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heather Johnson.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. So we were talking cereal prizes and we want to hear from you. Do you remember a special cereal prize you got back when you were a kid? Maybe as an adult. I don't know.
Maybe as an adult. I mean,
one time I got a lightsaber pen.
What? That's a really good prize.
Yeah. The pen didn't last very long though.
Oh, I remember way back, little albums. I don't know. Were they cardboard? They were kind of like, were they punch out? I don't remember. That's like a very, very early memory that it was very exciting for some reason. I don't even remember what was on it. I think it was a Halloween kind of compilation or something like that.
Ooh.
But that is a fun thing that you can interact with. And yeah.
Well, I think the Archie Sugar Sugar was on cereal boxes, too.
Oh, that would make sense. We were just talking about that earlier. Oh, my goodness.
See, we're pro Sugar Sugar here.
We're pro sugar, especially with the morning cereal, I think.
Remember how Calvin and Hobbes, Bill Watterson must have hated sugary cereals because he seemed to go after it a lot in Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah, was that chocolate frosted sugar bombs?
Yeah, sugar bombs. Yeah. Yeah, that's what it was.
Yep, I remember that. That's another, like, the comics. I mean, if you think about a perfect Saturday morning when you were a kid, the comics and a bowl of sugary cereal and then, like, cartoons on, that was an amazing morning.
See, I was always looking forward to the Sunday ones because they were in color.
Yeah. There's that too.
All right. So coming up in a bit, we're going to be hearing from Maury Edition, but we want to remind you in about a half hour, we're going to be joined by Jack Nackbar to talk about Spellbound, the Alfred Hitchcock movie starring Ingrid Bergman and Gregory Peck. I'm very excited for that conversation.
Me too.
To talk about kind of a Hitchcock in general.
Yeah. And Jack is so knowledgeable about all of these great classic movies and modern movies too, but it's always so much fun to talk to him.
So that'll be coming up in about a half hour. Now it's time for more from Morning Edition.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Leila Fadel. Good morning. Heads of state from 35 nations gathered in Paris to discuss Ukraine's future. But the meeting was overshadowed by President Trump's threats to take Greenland.
They were supposed to focus on how Ukraine's security and sovereignty will be guaranteed once the war stops. But after watching the U.S. seize Venezuela's president, several countries warned Washington not to go further and to respect the NATO allies' sovereignty.
We go to NPR's Eleanor Beardsley in Paris for more. Hi, Eleanor.
Good morning, Leila.
So what did the European leaders say about Greenland?
Leila, the issue was looming so large that it risked overshadowing the talks on Ukraine. So before they even got to work on Ukraine, they issued a statement on Greenland. France, Germany, Italy, Poland, Spain, Britain, and Denmark issued a statement stressing that Greenland, quote, belongs to its people and that only Denmark and Greenland can decide the island's future. But the statement did not condemn the U.S.'s aggressive language or what some see as threats to European sovereignty. No, it spoke of, quote, collective action to protect the Arctic in conjunction with NATO and the U.S. I spoke with Martin Quincey, who heads the Paris office of the nonpartisan think tank, the German Marshall Fund, and he said the Europeans have no choice but to make nice with the Trump administration. Here he is.
The Europeans are not able to take any kind of strong position on any issues related to U.S. foreign policy because Europe depends so much on the U.S. for its own defense and for the future of Ukraine.
And to make clear why Europe is so involved here, this is an autonomous region of Denmark. Now, Greenland was top of mind, but was anything accomplished on Ukraine?
Yeah, absolutely. This so-called coalition of the willing is really getting down to the nitty-gritty of after the war. They've been meeting since last year to prepare for that, when and if it comes. So this coalition is led by France and the UK, but it also includes non-European nations like Japan, Australia, and New Zealand. And last night they detailed how an eventual peace would be reinforced and Russia would be kept from invading again. There would be a high-tech mechanism to monitor a ceasefire on the contact line and troops. France and the UK have committed to boots on the ground to deter a future Russian attack. Let's listen to President Macron.
Pour la mise en place d'une force multinationale dans les airs, les mers, sur le sol.
He says there will be a multinational force on air, land, and sea to bring a reassurance the day after a ceasefire. Macron called it a robust security guarantee for a solid and durable peace. And by the way, the U.S. has also committed support for this force in the event of a Russian attack on Ukraine. And the U.S. was represented yesterday at the meeting by President Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner.
So it seems like there were actually two threats the Europeans were concerned about at this meeting.
Oh, that's exactly it, Leila. Russia is not the only threat in the room. Hanging over Europe more and more, the Trump administration is seen as a threat. Most recently, because of this bellicose talk about Greenland, Europeans watched agog over the weekend. Venezuela, as you said. And, you know, it's not the first time President Trump has talked about Greenland, but on Sunday, he called the mineral-rich world's largest island, quote, so strategic, and said the U.S. needs it from a standpoint of national security. Trump hasn't ruled out taking it by force, though Secretary of State Marco Rubio is suggesting the U.S. buy it. I spoke with political scientist Dominique Moisy with the Institut Montaigne, and he says Europe is facing actually two enemies.
One from Russia, the classical one, and now one from the United States of America. It looks as if Trump America betrayed Ukraine and now is about to aggress Europe.
Moisy says that after perceived backtracking by the Trump administration on support for Ukraine, the continued comments about Greenland suggest an escalating threat from America.
Interesting. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley in Paris. Thank you, Eleanor.
Thank you.
The Trump administration says Venezuela is safer after Nicolas Maduro was seized by American forces. Now the administration wants Venezuelan migrants who are in the U.S., particularly those with temporary protected status, to return to Venezuela. NPR Sergio Martinez Beltran spoke with a number of migrants who told him it's too soon.
Tricia McLaughlin, the Assistant Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, made an appeal to Venezuelans on Fox News on Sunday.
The great news for those who are here from Venezuela on temporary protected status is that they can now go home with hope for their country, a country that they love, that there's going to be peace, prosperity, and stability.
The Trump administration ended temporary protected status, or TPS, for more than 600,000 Venezuelans last year, saying conditions in the country had improved then. 28-year-old Sebastian had TPS. He has an ongoing immigration case, so he asked us to use his first name only. He says the U.S. government's narrative that things have improved since taking Maduro is just not true.
Si Estados Unidos tiene que extraer a un individuo que está tomando las funciones del gobierno en este momento.
If the U.S. has to extract a man who took over the government, Sebastian says, how am I supposed to believe the situation in Venezuela is good? Sebastian says he felt relief when he saw the news of Maduro's apprehension, but he was disappointed to see the Trump administration leave Maduro's deputy in power.
Pensé que si eso era efectivo, quizá iba a haber, no sé, un cambio radical en el país.
The U.S. State Department has advised U.S. citizens not to travel to Venezuela due to severe risk of wrongful detention, torture, terrorism, and kidnapping. On Monday, at least 14 journalists were detained in Venezuela, and there are reports that armed groups are already cracking down on those who support Maduro's ouster. Luis Falcón used to work for the Presidential Honor Guard, the security detail assigned to presidents and their family members. After he retired, he began protesting the regime. He says going back to Venezuela, given the current instability, is extremely risky.
Pero todavía hay un camino largo.
Falcón says there's still a long road ahead for Venezuela. He came to the U.S. in 2017 after officials threatened him with jail time for his activism against the regime.
Poner un pie en el país es inmediatamente ser llevado a una cárcel, una tortura y hasta la muerte.
Putting a foot back in Venezuela means I will be taken to jail, tortured, and potentially killed, Falcón says. He says TPS should be restored for Venezuelans until there's a transition of government. But the Trump administration has said no to reviving TPS. Instead, DHS Secretary Kristi Noem said on Sunday that every individual under TPS has the opportunity to apply for refugee status. However, immigration attorneys say that's misleading.
Saying that someone can apply for refugee status within the U.S. is, I'll say, the generous interpretation is that she misspoke.
Lily Axelrod is an immigration lawyer based in Memphis, Tennessee. To apply for refugee status, she says, an immigrant must be outside the U.S. She says Venezuelans in the U.S. could still apply for asylum, but that could be a challenge since the Trump administration paused all asylum decisions last November.
It's a frightening time, but maybe also a hopeful time. We all would like to see democracy and peace for Venezuela, and we would all like to see opportunities for Venezuelans who want to stay here.
Two things, Axelrod says, that will certainly not happen overnight. Sergio Martinez Beltran, NPR News, Austin.
This is NPR News.
And you're hearing Morning Edition here on member-supported KAXE KBXE. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heather Johnson. We receive support from the First State Bank of Big Fork with branches in Big Fork and Kellyer, offering tools for managing money on any mobile device. Hometown banking at its best since 1912. FSBBigFork.com. Member FDIC.
We receive support from Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984. Performing auto body and collision repair, as well as auto glass replacement, dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information at dalesautobodyinc.com.
So we were talking about prizes from cereal boxes and records getting out of them, and we heard from Steve from St. Paul. I, too, had the submarine. We were talking about the submarine that would, like, drop down.
Yeah.
And he said something with baking soda or something. That's right. You had to put something in the submarine to make it, like, drop up and down and stuff like that. Honey Sugar Crisp had an album that you could cut out of the back of the box. I forgot the song.
Yeah, I looked that up. We got another comment from Laura, who says, I love going to my grandparents' house. They had the small variety boxes of cereal. I once got a Jackson 5 record that was a punch-out on the back of the cereal box. And I looked it up, and I think it was, they were both the Jackson 5, and then there was the Archies album that we were talking about earlier. It looks like maybe both of them were from Super Sugar Crisp. So, yeah, treasures for sure. I wonder how many times you could play those punch-out albums, you know?
It just doesn't seem good for the needle.
I know, you're concerned about the player. I'm like, I want to know. How does that even work? Super cool. Thank you for texting in. We'd love to hear from you as well. If you have any memories about prizes from Cereal Box, text us at 218-326-1234.
That actually reminds me of a story. So back in, gosh, it would have been 2012, I think, I went to a record fair. And this was kind of still at the beginning of kind of the record boom that was about to happen in the early 2010s. But it wasn't quite happened. So there was still like that old school mentality at record fairs of just like older guys that just like have like their inside jokes and like stuff like that.
Okay.
And me and my brother went, and we came after lunch, so we both had toothpicks in our mouths.
Naturally.
And this one guy, we were, like, looking through his, like, selection of records, and the guy's like, hey, you guys want to see something? And then it was, like, a ad from a Mad magazine that was, like, supposed to be a novelty record, but it was just on the paper. And I didn't really understand the joke, and we're like, oh, okay. And then he goes to the guy next to him, like in the booth next to him. He's like, look at these two toothpick guys, think they're too good for this record or something like that.
Oh,
it was just really weird. Like,
toothpick guy slander. Yeah. That's like maybe the worst insult you can get while you're shopping for records. I mean, that's what I've heard, you know.
Well, it was just like that guy would not be saying that today, I don't think.
No.
No.
Do you think you would ever be the guy who's like, oh, these toothpick guys, they don't get the joke?
No, not if they're digging through my records about to buy something from me. I wouldn't be like that.
Yeah. Do you, when you're shopping for records, like through somebody's collection, right? If you don't choose something, do you feel like...
I feel awful.
Guilty? Yeah. You're like, look, you have 20 foreigner records, and I'm good on that front.
Yeah. That's the problem. I'm usually like, well, the ones that I really enjoy, I already have, so sorry. Or I just don't say anything. Just walk away.
Just going to not make eye contact and scooch along over here.
So recently, Heather, we were on a break here from the radio station, yeah. And I'm curious, what were you up to
while you were away? All the Christmas things, and then my son turned 13.
Wow. Over
break. I know. So I made a little birthday cake, and he got to celebrate with his best friend, and
what flavor are we talking to?
He actually really, well, both of us really like carrot cake, so I made him a carrot cake, and it was great. I read a book and a half, and what else did I do? I mean, I did some productive things, but I relaxed. I listened to a ton of music, which was great, and watched a bunch of movies. It was very relaxing. How about you? What did you do over the break?
Like you, I watched a bunch of movies. I made it to 401 movies last year. I was very proud of that.
I am so impressed by your tracking. Like, I wish I had that dedication. That's fantastic.
Well, I love looking at my stats.
Yeah, I know.
It's so fun. And then listened to a bunch of music also, but I also, my big thing I did was I finally got my entire record collection loaded up in Discogs, so I know what I have now whenever I go shopping. I can look up when I was like, this record seems familiar.
Yeah.
Do I have it? Yes, I do.
That is, so are you, generally speaking, a hyper-organized person? Because it seems like you are.
No, in very specific things, I'm hyper-organized. Okay. When it comes to my record collection, I'm very organized. My CD collection, not organized at all.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I would love to have that catalog of like, this is what I read and this is what I listened to and these are the movies I've watched, because I'm always, always struggling for, what was the name of that movie? What's the name of that guy in the movie? And I wish I had that dedication. So maybe I should make that my resolution.
Yeah, maybe that's
your
resolution.
Be more like Andrew.
But also during the break, I had to memorize my lines for Clue.
Yes, because you're in the play, which is fantastic.
Yes, the Bemidji Community Theater is going to be performing Clue at the end of this month. Yep. We had some practices this week. We got our blocking done last night. So now it's just like, getting it down.
Do you want to share which role you have?
I am Professor Plum.
Yes.
Which is the one that everyone was like, you're going to be Professor Plum. Because I feel like that's the name people remember the most from the game.
Mrs. Peacock,
maybe?
Mrs. Peacock, yeah. I was going to say Captain Peacock, but that's
Captain
something else.
Captain Peacock.
Yeah. Well, that is so exciting. And I know you're well on your way. Like, it's pretty intense, right, when you're learning your lines and getting everything set up.
But. Yeah, and this show is, so it's a comedy, but it's like rapid lines kind of thing, which I'm not quite used to, but I'm getting there.
Oh, I think it's going to be fantastic. I can't wait. It's going to be such a good show.
I'm excited to see what outfit I get to wear.
Yes. Do you have any say in that?
No, I don't. If I did, I would be like, let's get a purple suit.
Right. And then I'm wondering if the theater is like, great, this guy is 6'4".
Yeah. When they measured me for my outfit, they're like, another one with broad shoulders.
They're like, can we add extra fabric to the bottom of these pants and to the cuffs? Like, maybe you'll get really big cuffs.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I also get a pipe as a prop, so I'm pretty excited about that.
That's great. Do you get to pick the type of pipe you get, or?
No, it's just like the curvy pipe.
Okay.
Kind of like a Sherlock Holmes a little bit.
Will it have bubbles?
Unfortunately, no.
Oh.
It probably won't even have smoke, if we're being honest.
That's okay. It's still a good prop. Very good prop.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I love having a prop, especially. And I think I get a watch, too. So.
Okay.
Because I have to look at a watch at a certain point.
You can do what I do and just pretend I'm wearing a watch.
Well, isn't that what acting is?
Pretending? Yeah, I suppose.
That's Heather Johnson. I'm Andrew DeZingle. In a bit, we're going to be joined by Jack Nackbar talking about Alfred Hitchcock's movie Spellbound, which will be playing at the Edge Center for the Arts tomorrow at 6:30. But now we're going to listen to a song. This is Courtney Hartman from her album With You. This song is called Growing. And that was Courtney Hartman with the song Growing. That's what it was.
It was a good song.
Oh, my gosh. This is the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heather Johnson. And we receive support from Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984, performing auto body and collision repair as well as auto glass replacement, dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information at dalesautobodyinc.com.
And this is 91.7 KXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd. And on your smart speaker, we are People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
And we receive support from Paul Bunyan Communications, powered by the GigaZone, a broadband cooperative featuring all fiber optic GigaZone internet speeds up to 10 gig and local customer service. Learn more at paulbunyan.net.
And we received support from the Move It Real Estate Group.